You are listening to Best Frequencies Forever.
Can you read music?
No.
You're hired.
BFF.FM. You're listening to BFF.FM, where our DJs are so immersed in alternative music that it instills in them a quiet confidence.
I'm awesome.
And there you go. Best Frequencies Forever.
Namaste.
Yeah. Om Shanti, Jess.
Om Shanti. That was Love Removal Machine by The Cult, a request of listener Steven. We're taking all requests this hour. I'm just kidding. We're not.
Requests for people who want to join our cult.
Yes.
Those are the only requests we're taking.
I am Ma Shiva Jessica, and I am here this morning with Ma Lakshmi Leah. Namaste, Ma Lakshmi. If I didn't mention it already, you are listening to TV on the Radio here on BFF.FM. Mm-hmm. And Leah, I have to say you look lovely in that fuchsia robe.
Thank you. Thanks.
Great. It's a it's a color that suits you. And
it, yeah, it feels real good. I feel like, you know, it's right there with my energy, you know, field, mm-hmm. my aura.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah.
We are discussing a 6-part documentary mm-hmm. on Netflix called Wild, Wild Country that chronicles the rise and fall of Rajneeshpuram in the rugged hills of Oregon.
Yes.
Were you aware of this story before the documentary?
I was not aware of this story at all. I didn't know anything about any of this.
I vaguely knew about it. I actually used to work for a company that distributed some Osho literature.
Oh, sure, sure.
People are still adherents of Rajneesh. But, Rajneesh Sri Bhagwan, no, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
Something.
Yeah. Had a popular cult in the early 80s, and it started in India, and then they moved on to Oregon, you do.
That was one of the most amazing things for me, is it was this small little ashram in India that mm-hmm. then took over this like 100 by 100 acre plot in Oregon.
Yeah.
And it was fucking wild.
Wild's the right word for
there
it.
There was some stuff going down in the 80s.
Yeah, it's like, it's hard to wrap your head around. I don't know. Let's start. Would you join Rajneesh?
Oh, totally. Yeah. That was my big takeaway, is that I am ripe to join a cult. And it's interesting because I actually do think that is, I do think it's a product of kind of the times. I feel mm-hmm. like if you're living in a time where you don't feel like your life has meaning, or you don't feel like, the world makes sense. And we are certainly living in a time right now where I do not feel like much about America makes sense.
Right.
I absolutely see the appeal of somebody giving you a path that seems clear and a path that seems like, I don't know, to be operating at a higher vibration or whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting. So these people were devout followers mm-hmm. of this cult that I don't know if they would call it a religion instead or a movement. It certainly had a spiritual aspect to it, but they didn't reject like material possessions. They were fine with material possessions. Bhagwan had 93 Rolls Royces.
Yes,
he wasn't shy about that. No. At one point they described a Rolex that he had that was diamond encrusted and worth $1 million.
Yes, that did. They showed it, and mm-hmm. it was on like some grainy 80s VHS tape, and it still almost blinded me. Like, I can only imagine in real life what the deal is. But his teachings emphasize the importance of meditation, awareness, love, celebration, courage, creativity, and humor.
Yeah.
That all sounds great, right?
So what I found so fascinating about it is I didn't do a deep dive on Osho's teachings,
yes.
but they didn't get into that in the documentary.
Yeah.
It wasn't and I go back and forth on whether that was a good decision. I feel like maybe it was too broad to take on in a 6-hour series, but I feel like they could have done an episode that kind of laid it out. But maybe it doesn't. Okay, so maybe it doesn't matter so much. It's not about what he was teaching, but these people were, it seemed like almost like a contagion, the way some people just got swept up in it right away. And like they were all wearing the same clothes. And then now some people who were part of it are part of this series reflecting on it. And most of them are not, you know, it all fell apart and mm-hmm. the ashram was dismantled eventually. And it ended in kind of an ignominy, but these people haven't, they don't renounce his teachings.
Yeah.
They are still like deeply in love with him.
Yeah.
And I just want to know what it is that is so hypnotic.
It about was, it truly did seem hypnotic. Like I was blown away by, he's arrested at the end,
mm-hmm.
and there's all this footage of all the reporters being like, how is he okay?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he a good prisoner? And all the guards being like, he's amazing. He's
yeah.
the best prisoner we've ever had. Like, he's wonderful. He's, mm-hmm. you know, it just seemed like truly everybody who came in contact with him was moved in like yeah. a very inexplicable way.
They describe him. I mean, Ma Anand Sheela, who's kind of our main bad bitch, we'll get mm-hmm. to her. She describes being in love with him immediately
yes.
when she sees him. And yes. a lot of people like talk about his eyes and his beard, and it's
yeah.
like this infection,
mm-hmm.
infectious presence mm-hmm. somehow. Yeah. And I want to hear like one lecture that swayed someone and made them be like, oh shit, I'm staying here.
Yeah.
There was an article, I think it was in HuffPost, about someone, if it was written by someone who had reported on it contemporaneously in the 80s
mm-hmm.
and he at the time met with a family who the husband was a I think Princeton professor, and he ended up joining the Rajneesh, and then his adult daughter joined, and his wife and her three other teenagers were just kind of abandoned by mm-hmm. them. They went to Oregon, and at some point the woman took her other kids to go visit her husband and daughter in at the ashram in Oregon. And while she was there, like, her teenage son defected to,
yeah.
to the cult, and she lost another kid to this cult. And I just yeah. want to know, like, how it's like, yeah, I don't know. There's something about it that, and I was, as I was watching it, the first couple episodes and seeing all these people describe how they got swept up in it immediately, I was like, oh shit, if I watch this too long, am I gonna join the Rajneesh?
Yeah.
Should I not look at in Bhagwan's eyes?
Jess, I'm wearing the color. It's already happened.
For
it's too
our
late for
listening
us.
Audience,
yeah.
Leah really is wearing maroon.
I really am wearing maroon, which what I thought was, you know, coincidental, but I don't know, maybe on a spiritual level, Bhagwan's calling.
Yeah.
I feel like a documentary just about Bhagwan and his teachings could, I mean, this could have been a 24-hour documentary, it seems.
Yeah.
And I did enjoy the fact that they didn't discuss anything really about the day-to-day life of the cult. It was more about this giant war that sprung up between the cult and
right.
the townspeople of Antelope, Oregon. It was really interesting. But back to your point about how hypnotic he was, this was a guru who took a vow of silence for like 3 years, and
yes.
everybody was still like, oh yeah, no, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it's
super powerful.
Yeah.
I'm going to read briefly from Wikipedia. Under the article about Bhagwan, Rajneesh's teachings delivered through his discourses were not presented in an academic setting, but interspersed with jokes and delivered with a rhetoric that many found spellbinding.
Sure.
The emphasis was not static, but changed over time. Rajneesh reveled, I can't read this morning, or any morning, reveled in paradox and contradiction, making his work difficult to summarize. And I find that interesting, because how, you know, if this guy's just up there riffing, making some jokes,
yeah.
talking about, yeah, I don't know. So, okay.
And then there's no core belief. You're like,
yeah.
so we believe in this, but sometimes this is okay too. And then.
So my guess is that you were talking about, you know, how times of chaos probably make people more susceptible to
yeah.
this sort of, you know, an alternative explanation or a belief that there's some higher plane
or just
some way to reject society.
Opting out of mm-hmm. a society that
and
you
so
don't
I think, and a lot of these people in
Rajneeshpuram
were like upper middle class
yes,
white
definitely.
People.
That was striking.
And my theory is that if you lived through the Vietnam War era,
mm-hmm.
I think that that was so psychologically damaging to you know, anyone who is paying any attention. And these aren't war veterans. They're just, you know, people who probably burn their draft cards. I think that was so horrifying to live through that era, that if someone offered you the idea that, like, you can reject the society and your, like, societal norms are just a product of your mind.
Yeah, it's just
and you can just unbind yourself from them. Yeah. Like, that would be very appealing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, truly, I do wonder if there are a bunch of, like, cults
yeah.
in their nascent stages currently that, you know, we're not going to know about for a while. But, yeah, it seems... I'm definitely ripe for joining the cult, is the upshot.
Yeah, we'll just put it out there. If you have a cult and
if you guys are looking for members, yeah,
need a couple sannyasins.
I feel like we should start our own cult, though. If you're going to do it, we'll have our own beliefs.
Yeah, no, we'll work on that. Okay, so let's back up a little bit. So it's the documentary kind of opens with these people setting up their commune in Oregon, mm-hmm. and they buy a ranch that is like 100 miles
yes.
of land
yeah.
and kind of move into the backyard of a town in Oregon that has a population of 50.
Yes.
And that's where shit starts to go wrong.
Mm-hmm. I'll say.
What? And I like that the documentary didn't appear to take sides.
Yeah.
Neither side comes off great.
No, it was very interesting. I mean, there is a lot of NIMBYism for sure.
Yes.
Like, the people in this town were like, how dare these fucking hippies move into this ranch that they've purchased and build on it?
Yeah.
Like, they were just mad, basically, because they were building housing for all the people that
right.
were moving there.
And there is, like, there's definitely a small-mindedness about it, and a, like, xenophobia is not the right word, because most of these people were white, but, you know, a distaste for their sort of values.
Yeah.
But it's all coded for,
yeah,
it's coded language for,
Yeah.
I don't like you.
I definitely think it was, I mean, it's an Indian guru. And
mm-hmm.
and one of the people was saying, one of the people from the town was like, we just, you know, worked hard all our lives and just wanted to retire here and have it be this quiet little town. And
yeah.
they didn't want that. And it's like, fuck you. Like, who gets to say it?
Yeah, they bought the land.
Really leads into all the things that we're currently dealing with also, with, like,
yeah.
immigration and things mm-hmm. like that. It's just like, who gets to say what any place is,
right.
or who gets to say who gets to do what? And
yeah. And so I sympathized with the Rajneeshis, but I also have, like, if I put myself in that position and I lived in a small town in Oregon and just suddenly out of nowhere
mm-hmm.
all of these people come in all wearing the same color
mm-hmm.
all with these weird fucking smiles plastered mm-hmm. across their mm-hmm. faces, I would be weirded out.
Sure.
I don't know if I would be welcoming. I think it'd
yeah.
be weird.
It would be weird, but the thing is, they really did just want to keep to themselves.
Right.
I don't think that they were trying to... They just wanted to do their thing. And
right.
their thing
but where
was to
it gets
form
interesting,
their own community and
so the,
their own...
So, you know, the
city.
Town of Antelope's not welcoming. They don't
yes.
like these smiling fucks wandering around. And
sure.
they...
in their purple clothes.
You know, I don't think these people were trying to push their lifestyle. And in that, it sort of rang like... homophobia.
Yes.
Like, no one was trying to make these people be vegetarian or, you know, have orgies.
Yes.
But they, this idea of, like, these people with their free love,
yeah.
they were disgusted
yeah.
by it. But instead of reacting by trying to make a connection with the townspeople or make nice in any way, the Rajneeshis turn into the worst kind of trolls immediately.
Epic. Yeah, epic. They were... That was one of the things I was surprised by throughout the entire documentary, was their, like, insane creativity in
mm-hmm.
ways to, A, annoy people, and B, work through roadblocks that were put in their way.
Yeah, they're, like anonymous
they,
in that way.
Yeah.
You piss them off, and they organize, and they take your fucking town, and they make the local diner. they renamed the diner
Zorba the Buddha.
Zorba the Buddha.
Yeah,
and they did not serve bacon anymore at Zorba the Buddha.
They did not.
So yeah, these people organized. They started trolling people by like constantly videotaping locals and shining bright lights in their houses at night, and then
walking around with guns.
Yeah, well, they organized. They started buying real estate. They started jockeying elections in various ways to
get themselves elected. Yeah, they insinuated themselves into the city council, and they still let like two people from Antelope be on the council in the hopes of, you know, trying to work together. But really, I'm sure it was all sending coded messages. It was pretty fascinating, though. Truly, their creativity in dealing with every roadblock that came their way. Like, they were intent on getting their way.
Yeah. And it was impressive. Yeah. You know? They set up this, what seemed like a self-sustaining community, but it is kind of murky where some of the finances were coming
murky.
From. But they turned this, you know, waterless ranch in Oregon into an oasis.
They built basically. A dam.
Yeah.
They had a fucking dam. They had an airport. They had like it was
Air Rajneesh flew in and out.
Yeah, it was insane. And they did all this within a couple of weeks. I mean,
it was what, 150 people to start
it was
something?
Crazy. And it was their single minded pursuit of what they want. I really do think that if either side had sort of given a little bit at some point in the proceedings, it would not have escalated to the point that it did. And the point that it did was they tried to poison the townspeople of Antelope.
Yeah, there is some light terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Medium to light terrorism.
Sure.
The largest bioterrorist attack in history, actually.
Yeah, sure. But, you know.
But no one died, right? I bet all those people
gotta break
up,
a few
lost
eggs
some weight.
To make some omelets, you know? Nobody died.
Salmonella filled eggs.
Yeah.
So, should we talk about the woman behind the man?
Let's talk about her.
Ma Anand Sheela, the personal secretary of Bhagwan, and I don't know, maybe the Lady Macbeth.
Definitely.
Maybe.
Definitely. She was amazing.
She
nothing but respect for my Bhagwan.
I really did love her from the beginning. She has, and I'm so grateful that I do not ever have to interact with her because she would be maddening.
Yes.
Like, she's a master troll. I think that maybe the best weapon of psychological warfare is to never not smile.
Yes.
Because, oh man, she would drive me fucking nuts. But what did she say at the beginning? Like, here, I have it written down.
She talked about how they should all have been grateful that they came to Oregon and how fucking dare they not be happy.
She said that she's been accused of a laundry list of crimes, most of them attempted.
Yeah.
And she said, usually I succeed in what I do.
Yeah.
That's a joke.
Gosh.
The best. Yeah, she's a fucking bad bitch. And
totally.
I think she might be. She's either a psychopath or she's just has the determination of a man, and we accuse any woman with that of being a psychopath.
Yeah, that's truly what I feel. I genuinely feel like she was just fucking amazing at her job, and she carried out all of these things that Bhagwan asked of her, and she executed stuff almost flawlessly. Really, her only thing was not killing the guy that they tried to kill eventually. But
usually she
succeeds. I really, really do think that this case was a case of, like, she was just really good at her job and people hated that. Like, she truly was. I mean, she took trolling to new heights before anyone knew what trolling was. Like, she was on TV just dropping F-bombs on the Phil Donahue show.
Always smiling.
Always with a smile on her face and just
And she has that way of turning a conversation. And it's so frustrating and so, like, obvious, but it's the worst kind of person to talk to, where you accuse her of something and she just tacks to the left.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would you talk about this when there's this?
Yeah.
And
yeah, the whataboutism. Yeah. And then she, yeah. But then you find yourself getting irrationally, yeah, insanely mad at her, which is, of course, what she wants.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that the access they had... that was one of the things I really did like about this documentary, is it was very well documented.
Yes, that was amazing.
They had all this footage of everything, and they then had, you know, modern day interviews with Ma and Sheila. And yeah, she is the same. Like, she is just, mm-hmm, this, like,
no
unapologetic,
apologies,
like, yeah, bad bitch. Like, yes, I did what I did. I did it because that's what I wanted. That's it.
Yeah.
Like,
she said at some point, she says, of course I love my power. And yeah. I was just like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She, yeah,
not,
I,
sorry.
I do not think she was a psychopath. My husband did say that he thought she was definitely a psychopath. And I don't think so. Yesterday, mm-hmm, we were talking with friend of the show, Inger.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks
Ma,
that
Krishna Inger.
Ma Krishna Inger. She thinks... She also thought she was a psychopath, and she, yeah, thought she was a sociopath who, you know, could fake empathy.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think that she did that.
At what point did she seem empathetic?
Yeah, I didn't think she was trying to fake any empathy. She, yeah, was straight ahead, like, this is how it was. This is what I did. This is the true story of Ma and Aunt Sheila. You think, mm-hmm, you know, you don't know. Like, yeah, it was very... She was... fascinating,
yeah,
and she was compelling, and I do think that she, like, every move she made total sense to me. I mean, not total sense to me, obviously,
not
but
the poisonings or the
not the poisoning
assassination
and
plot.
Everything, but I thought she was clearly Machiavellian, and just, I love that she was just unapologetic about it. She's, mm-hmm, just like, this is what I wanted, that's why we did that. And actually, we just received a tweet from listener Inger, who said she thinks she's faking empathy with the old folks she's working with now, who she's also probably fleecing.
Yeah. So now she works. She lives in Switzerland now, mm-hmm, and works with mentally ill elderly, I think.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I mean, they probably have really good health care in Switzerland. I'm sure she gets paid by the government.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, what's interesting
is,
so this whole, the kind of climax of her story, well, maybe, is, you know, she's dedicated to Osho. So Osho and Bhagwan are the same person.
Yes.
I apologize for going back and forth. She's his personal secretary. She's, like, doing everything. She's kind of running the show, but presumably is an adherent to his,
yes,
philosophies. Was in love with him from the moment she saw him.
She met met with him nightly when he took his vow, mm-hmm, of silence, and she would relay his wishes.
Right.
But
she, it all comes to a head when, like, I mean, we can get into this more, these Hollywood types come in,
yeah,
and they're,
sure,
more rich and powerful people who are sort of like, Bhagwan kind of gets in with the Hollywood crowd, starts,
yeah,
taking volume.
It's what it is the tale as old as time,
yeah,
where a man fucking can't keep his eye on the prize and gets distracted by something shiny, and so,
right,
she has to,
literally,
be like, the fuck, let me, like, get you back in check.
Right. And it all kind of falls apart, and she realizes she can't do this anymore,
yeah,
and she busts out of there.
Flees, like, on one of his private jets.
That was so...
Her and 12 of her little acolytes.
Yeah.
And
she said, at least we left like queens.
Yes.
But this all falls apart. She has to leave Bhagwan, this thing she's dedicated her life to.
Yep.
And years later, he's dead. This is all dismantled. She's still, her house is covered in pictures of him. She's,
mm-hmm,
still, like, is in love with him.
Yeah.
And doesn't regret, I don't think she regrets anything.
No. And to that point, the thing, again, about, you know, this being all about somebody devoting her life to a man who can't keep it together to stay focused. And that motherfucker said after she left, and he was all butthurt that she left,
oh, yeah,
said that, you know, she just was in love with me and I didn't love her. Like, that old nugget. Like, don't go ahead and trot that out there, because it was more than she was in love with you. Like, she gave you your entire life.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's maddening.
The worst.
It's just maddening. Yeah, that it all gets reduced to the fact that, like,
oh, I didn't want to have sex. I wouldn't fuck her anyway.
Like, don't. Just don't. Gross. So pathetic and transparent and just, ew. Yeah,
all men are children.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Sheila takes off on his private jet with her girl gang.
Yeah.
And apparently he was not aware of any of this. A huge group of people, like, wave goodbye to her.
Busy getting high. That was his thing. He got all hopped up on goofballs with the Hollywood crowd who were feeding him meds all the time. That
so he doesn't find out till she's gone and he's pissed.
Yeah.
He breaks a years-long vow of silence to put her on blast.
Yeah.
Not just to all his followers, but to, like, the media and law enforcement.
Yeah.
They've been committing crimes for years and years. And because he's so mad at Sheila, he's like, yeah, FBI, come on in and check things out, because she tried to kill someone.
Yeah.
Dick.
She's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
he is like a fucking 14-year-old troll. If this happened today, Bhagwan would be like putting her naked Snapchats on a
Instagram. Totally. Yeah. It's the whole thing is just sad. She's left holding the bag for everything.
Yeah. Fuck her.
Another example of the patriarchy. It all down. But the thing is, it was truly this, hearing the people who were there talk about it, it did seem at the beginning like this idyllic, like, idealized, like, these people, whatever, so they're crazy and they're free love and their sex discos, whatever, like their yelling sessions,
whatever. chaotic breathing. We're gonna go to a song soon and then we'll come back, we'll all do some chaotic breathing.
It's like live and let live. Like, it seemed like they were all happy, everyone was chill, like they truly were kind of working to have this community. Like, they said repeatedly, like, there was no crime, there was no like anything. And yeah, I just feel like it's another example of, like, you hold this guy up and really it's Sheila who's running the whole show. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, like, she never, ever got her due.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
To your point of
like, people just wanting to do their thing, like, I think it feels like Oregon and the Pacific Northwest is sort of a place where people, like, go to.
Yeah.
To be alone and do their own thing. And that's what this town of Antelope felt like. Like, people who valued, you know, having space and not very much human interaction. But then, you know, some other people come in and want to do the same thing. They just happen to have a different thing they want to do in the privacy of their own 100-square-mile ranch. And it's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing.
We were here first.
Yeah, we don't like it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to go to a song. And when we come back, we will do some chaotic breathing and sex disco.
The hottest spot in San Francisco is sex disco, you guys. Yeah,
maybe if we have time we can also shit on Brunch Con, the our modern day cult of the mission.
Yeah.
All right, stay tuned, we'll be right back.
I will never still trying to fix my mind.
Sorry, we are laughing at, I don't even know what to call this, but...
the greatest thing that's ever been sent to us.
Have you retweeted it?
I'm doing it right
Thank
now.
You, KBN, for putting together a little montage of Osho set to, I believe that's The Cult. Yeah, we'll just retweet it and let you guys take a look.
The picture of him, like, jogging in short shorts is really something. I'm really understanding why people join this cult. He's, like, jumping in the air. It's, yeah, it's crazy. That's awesome. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, KBN, and thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
I think that pretty much shuts down anything that anyone could send us on Twitter, but if you have something to try to top that, you can tweet at us. We are at BFF TV on the radio. Please share your thoughts. Let us know if you've ever been in a cult, if you remember hearing about Rajneesh in the early 80s. Or
I would love to know what founding tenets of your cult would be important to you if you were to start a cult. Jess, do you have...
To start a cult?
Yeah. What's going to be important to you in your cult? No hugging is very important.
Yeah, like no touching of any kind.
Mm-hmm. That's a real cornerstone of my faith. And
no nudity.
Yeah, pretty much. Keep that shit under wraps. Although I will say that's one of the things I was genuinely struck by. So they have a lot of footage of the people in the cult. And it's the most attractive cult I think I've ever seen. All those members were very beautiful and very fit. They were all, like, toned. There was lots of, like, appropriate nudity. Like, those people should all have been proud to be nude.
I don't know if it's, like, the type of people that are attracted to it are already, like, you know, kind of young, hippie, vegetarians.
Gorgeous, glowing
or,
people.
Yeah. If, you know, working the land and then...
Eating
the
your
day.
Macrobiotic diet.
Yeah, and then
whatever.
Having orgies at night mm-hmm. just, like, keeps you in top form.
Yeah.
I am talking myself into this cult. I am indoctrinating
if
myself.
If Goop is a multi-billion dollar industry, like, we can definitely get some, like, sex cult disco money going for as the latest exercise regime. We'll just have people, work really hard during the day and then have, like, you know, orgies at night.
Yeah, it's like a full life workout.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm into it. Where was I going with that?
I'm
thinking about orgies
the,
and
yeah,
naked
what
people
the,
now.
What the, you know, foundation of your cult
All right,
be.
So some orgies.
Yeah.
Not all the time.
Yeah. TBD. We'll, we'll maybe work up.
Maybe that's why I haven't joined a cult, because I don't like anything. There's not really much you can entice me with. I just, I don't know, just kind of generally thumbs down on everything.
So maybe that'll just
How
be
about
our,
you?
That'll be our cult then. It's just like, do what you want to do.
Sitting quietly.
Nobody wants to hear about it. Yeah. Keep it to yourself. That'll be our founding.
No hashtags, no mantras.
Yeah.
No bullshit.
No bullshit.
That's just, our mantra.
Yeah. Live your life, everybody. Do it in the privacy of your own home. Don't
no
make
gathering.
Me responsible for all of this, okay?
No assembly.
No assembly, yeah.
Well,
no guns. I'm pretty firm on that, though.
We'll just have a text chain. Yeah, no guns. That's our cult.
We'll have a Slack channel. Okay. Let's
yes!
Just do that. Let's,
perfect.
All right, we'll have a cult of Slack.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
How about you? I don't know. What do you want out of a cult?
That's mainly it. Like,
no touching?
I would like somebody to prepare my meals. That'd be good.
I do like the creative limitation of only wearing like a a small color palette.
Yeah, it does make it easy.
I feel like, you know, then you could go on Zappos and just click those colors and narrow your choices down by a lot.
Sure.
Save you a lot of time.
What's your color palette going to be Black. For our cult?
Yeah. It's boring. It's not
classic.
Creative.
It's timeless, Jess.
But yeah, it's slimming. I look good in black.
Yeah.
I can't help
it's like our soul.
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
What fleet of all the same car do you want?
Oh, definitely a fleet of smart cars, for sure. That's going to be, we're going to be the smart cult.
The German
guys.
Cult? Yeah.
Inger said that she already wears mostly black. So
perfect.
You're in.
You're in.
You're in. How about you? What would your fleet of vehicles be? Mine would be smart cars and a fleet of Ski-Doos, because I feel like you have to, you know, have something that's a little out there to establish, because otherwise they're like, that's just environmentally responsible. Like,
yeah, fuck that.
You have to have something that's a little, like, flashy. So.
Oh, yeah, I want, like, a early 80s Monte Carlo or some sort of, nice. Like, low-rider muscle car.
All gremlins, all... yeah.
Sure, why not?
We briefly mentioned how the Hollywood contingent got to the cult and ruined everything, as they are wont to do. And then that got me thinking, too, what Hollywood adherents would you like to have in our cult?
Oh, God.
Like, who would you like to be the spokesperson for our cult?
Oh, I should have thought about this. I mean, I don't... So... Jay Duplass comes to mind, not just because he's a producer on this, but I feel like he could play a culty guy. I think we started watching this because it has the Duplass name stamped on it, and we will watch anything that the Duplasses even pretend to be involved in.
Yeah.
I like that it is produced by the Duplass brothers and is directed the right word for a documentary? It's another set of brothers.
Yeah.
The Ways.
And
I like the idea that the Duplasses only work with other brothers.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think if you've got to have like an adherent who's going to be in your cult, like you got to go big. It's like, I'm talking The Rock. Like The Rock is going to be like the first celeb who gets into the TV on the radio cult.
How about Busy Phillips?
Sure, she's great. Yeah, I would love to work with her in any capacity, but especially to have her like chill for our cult. That'd be great.
We were talking before the show about Brunch Con, which I didn't know what that was until 5 minutes ago when I Instagrammed, and that was a suggested location. So apparently, we are in Brunch Con, and Leah did God's work Googling it, and Jesus Christ, it's the worst.
When I was driving here this morning, I passed the Armory. Mm-hmm. Which had a line wrapped all the way around the block. And I was wondering what it was. And it turns out it is BrunchCon.
Right. You guys Google BrunchCon if you feel like hating yourselves this morning. But anyway, I mentioned Busy Phillips joining our cult. And I was thinking like, oh, she'd be so fun to have brunch with. We could do mimosas. And then I was like, oh, no, I'm not person.
Yeah, we can't do that.
I mean, brunch is the best thing in the world. And I think this city fucking ruined it.
Yeah, totally.
Now it's like associated with... fucking gross Instagrams.
Brunch is a delight. And yeah, to have Brunch Con and to have something in there called the Museum of Brunch is a real slap in the face, because that's not a museum, you guys.
Yeah, this generation is successfully dismantling the meaning of museum.
Yeah.
The Museum of Ice Cream, you guys, it's not a fucking museum.
It's not a museum. Yeah.
Anyway.
Inger actually just sent us a hot link. She said that she forgot to mention this, but there is this, which is likely a proto-cult in town, and it's called onetaste.us. And
be careful clicking on that.
It takes you to a website.
This could be a King and Yellow situation.
Starts off, get the official How to Ohm email series.
Oh, boy.
And it says, One Taste focuses on certain aspects of human sexuality. All content on this site is produced by adults, exclusively for adults, and should not be viewed by anyone under the age of 18. Oh, it's about orgasmic meditation.
Oh,
I can't even meditate, guys. I'm not gonna make the effort to try to put more pressure on myself to meditate and have it be orgasmic. I'm good. It's fine.
All right. Well, Inger, thank you for sharing what you're into. And yeah, anyone else? If you have any other cults you want to pitch us, we're still looking.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do some more shopping around.
I want to talk briefly about the like law enforcement characters that were in the show, because no one made
by characters you mean real people.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Historical figures who are still alive.
Actual human beings.
No one made me side harder with the Rajneesh issues and all their bullshit than those fucking there was a assistant U.S. attorney named
Frommeyer,
David Frommeyer, Sausage King of Chicago. Who you fucking know that guy has been wearing a bow tie since he was 9 years old and worked his whole life to cultivate this buttoned up, the books lawyer type. Yep. And they go after, I think it was him. They went after Rajneesh for immigration stuff to try to get him kicked out of the country. And their first thing was he's here on a visa as a religious teacher. But because he's taken a vow of silence, he's obviously not teaching anything. So he needs to go, which, whatever. And then they finally are descending on the compound. Mm-hmm. They're going to arrest him at the same time they arrest Sheila abroad because she's fled to Germany. And a couple Lear jets land and then take off a couple minutes later. And of course, Osho is on that jet. He's getting the fuck out of there. They chase him around the country and finally arrest him. So he's trying to leave the country, right? He's trying to escape to the Bahamas. They arrest him and they do this thing that seemed like fucking waterboarding, which is they're taking him back to prison somewhere or to trial in Oregon, but they take 2 weeks and stop and put him in a different prison every night, which is just like, I think about trying to do air travel for half a day and like, I felt like that was so awful. And it's, I don't know, it's supposed to be this form of like physical and psychological torture. And it's all comes down. They fucking find him guilty and they deport him.
Yeah.
After all that, they chased him around and tortured him so that they could do exactly what he was trying to do to himself.
Yeah.
And that guy, Dave Frommeyer, had the gall to say that in the courtroom, Osho definitely had a dark presence. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you don't get to have it both ways.
No.
You don't get to act like you're some by-the-books attorney, but then also be like acting like you're fighting true evil or something.
Give
me a fucking break.
It's the classic, like, Dave Frommeyer got involved because one of the ranchers was, you know, a longtime family friend with the Frommeyers, and they had grown up together as friends. And he lived in Antelope and was like, hey, you should really check out this weird cult. And so then Dave Frommeyer got, like, it was one of those things. It's another, like, fragile masculinity thing where like Sheila yelled at him once or something and then that was like his mission. And it's the whole thing about the Rajneeshis did underestimate the townspeople and kind of think they were very sanctimonious and thought like, oh, these hicks. And it turned out that the one rancher who got Frommeyer involved, his father had like was one of the founders of Nike. Like these were not like
They weren't subsistence farmers.
Yeah, these were like generations long, old money, like rich people who wanted things their way and knew enough people in power to, you know, make things uncomfortable for the Rajneeshis. But they absolutely dug in.
Yeah.
But we also haven't talked about the, I was going to say the one big misstep, but let's say one of a few missteps. Again, with the, you know, roadblocks being thrown, there were going to be some elections and it was looking like the Rajneeshis were trying to get a bigger presence on the city council so they could, you know, make the laws their way, which is why it's important to vote, guys. Yeah. But one of the things they did, which I thought was insane and also genius, was they toured around America mm-hmm. and rounded up homeless people to bring them to the ranch, which Oregon's voting laws are insanely lax, and you can register to vote in Oregon. And they basically like shipped in yeah. all these additional bodies just to have other people to vote. And then they unceremoniously yeah. dumped all the homeless people.
That was one of the Oregon. Most touching and sad parts of the documentary was, so yeah, they have these kind of, at the time at least, had lax voter registration regulations. And so, but then they were trying to change them at the last minute, like yeah. trying to get people's registrations invalidated because they knew what the Rajneeshis were up to. And a lot of these homeless people were standing up at this rally and talking about, you know, they
felt accepted. They'd found
a place. Yeah. They were like working and, you know, not doing drugs, and they had found a home, and them speaking out for their voter rights. Mm-hmm. Like that was so, so touching and beautiful.
Yeah.
And I thought like that at that moment, I was like, this is really actually a good thing.
Yeah.
And then like to see them
rehumanizing these people.
Yeah. And it was beautiful. And then after it doesn't work and Sheila decides to give all these people the boot, that was like,
yeah,
that was really sad.
Yeah. And I do wonder if
various small towns in Oregon had suddenly large populations of mentally ill people yeah. running around.
And they drugged the yes. unruly homeless people with Haldol in yeah. their...
I also thought, how crazy was it? Like, in the early 80s, they went around and, like, got homeless people to come, you know, have a better life. Imagine going to Oregon to get away from your meth problem.
That's yeah.
Like, it's a real throwback to a different era.
Yeah. And Ingrid just tweeted at us that we really need to read about Synanon, which was...
Okay.
Started as a rehab and then became a cult. So, yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, I am open to. One other thing I want to talk about quickly before we wrap up is I felt like this was very timely in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Like I kept thinking about the Trump administration. Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but it felt similar in that like a lot of people who got wrapped up in this sort of had to make an election to keep believing in something, because the farther you go down this path, the less likely you are to be able to get your old
yeah,
life back.
Yeah.
And like as people were sort of either jumping ship or like flipping on, you know, as they were being charged with crimes, some people flipped and became cooperating witnesses in exchange for immunity or whatever. It just felt like watching the like rats dive out of the Trump administration.
Yeah.
And I kept
all the indicted
thinking about that, and then seeing stuff about like voter rights and voter suppression and all that. It's it feels odd, even though, you know, there's explicit ties made to anything.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought there was something timely about this.
It
story.
Did feel very timely. And especially with, you know, the original question of like who gets to do what and who has precedent in making those laws. And it was insanely ballsy what they tried to do.
Yeah.
Like they were just like, we're not going to let you shut it down. We're going to do everything we can to live out our vision. And yeah, I feel like if at some point the people in Antelope had just chilled a little bit, like the whole thing may not have escalated to the point it did.
Yeah.
But yeah, the like Machiavellian scheming and the amount the amount of like organization and like really, really complicated like ideas that they were putting forth. Like they seated people in cities mm-hmm. and like had ashrams all throughout America, but they would like send people there and have them live in like Houston for a year and have them get married. And
yeah, they're so they doing could, immigration
was,
fraud.
Yeah, it was really, really crazy.
Yeah.
So they could get more people into the.
Mm-hmm.
And
like doing crimes and sort of like justifying them through some sort of kind of bullshit philosophical lens.
Yeah.
And the, you know, just unceremoniously using poor people to your ends and then discarding them when you're done.
Yeah. But also Trumpian. The fact of having the conviction of your belief. I don't think I've ever been like that certain about anything or like that passionate about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was amazed by how how still clearly like moved everybody who was there at the ranch at the beginning was by, you know, it shaped all these people's lives for good or for ill, you know, including Ma, whoever, who went to prison.
Oh, Ma Shanti.
Ma Shanti.
The Australian woman. Yeah, she had a very touching story. And she was the only one who had left and was reflecting on how slowly she had to sort of get her life back and unlearn this programming. But even the way she described it, it felt like such a loss for her, you know, like she didn't denounce it like you would imagine someone denouncing having
it wasn't like it ruined my life Jonestown and sent me to something. Prison. Yeah.
Yeah. But it did happen to ruin her life and send her to prison. That's all the time we have. But I feel like we could talk a lot longer about this fascinating documentary. Yes. And so, yeah, I give it a hearty recommend.
Yes. Do check out Wild, Wild Country.
Yeah.
We're taking applications for our cult. We'll have more details available as we firm up what's important to us. So if you guys...
We should get one of those websites that's just like one page
with
like cryptic text. And you have to like just give us your email address to learn more.
Yeah.
Well, thanks you guys for listening. And close with a song that was in Wild, Wild Country, I believe. Oh, I just got to turn on the thing. thanks for listening. Stay tuned to BFF.FM for Indie Rock Radio Girl, and we will be back next week with more TV on the Radio.
You better run for your life. Run from me, baby. Run, my good wife. Run from me, baby. You better run for your life. And each time I see you, I contemplate what I love most of all, your swinging gaze. Run from me, darling. Run, my good wife. Run from me, darling. You better run for your life. Run, 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 run.